Here's a portion of the interview which I recorded with one of the most decorated of actors in recent history, Alan Alda, probably most famous for his work on the television series MASH, not only as an actor, but also as a writer and director on the program as well. The occasion of this interview with Alan Alda was a visit which he paid to Alverno College, part of a speaker series sponsored at the time by Harry W. Schwartz Bookstore. And he was specifically talking in this interview and at Alverno College about his recently published memoir called Never Have Your Dog Stuffed and Other Things I Have Learned. Very good. One of the things you mentioned there, which I think is quite interesting, is you say most authors seem to hate going around the country talking about their books. You say, I loved it. I went everywhere I could, and as the writer Alexander King used to say, I covered America with the slime of my amiability. Tell us why you think this experience of not only of writing the book itself, but then of wanting to share it with the public as you did, why you think that was so, and what exactly gave you so much pleasure?
Well, a couple of things. One is, as you know from reading the book, I've wanted to be as good a writer as I could be since I was 8 years old. So, I mean, I really wanted to be a writer before I wanted to be an actor. So I've written a lot. It's mostly dramatic stuff I've written, movies and television shows. But I never wrote a book before, and I wanted this to be accepted as a piece of writing and not as a bunch of revelations about a celebrity. And there really aren't any revelations. And people should know if they're reading it for if they're getting it for that, they're not going to. That's not going to be in it. I hoped to write an interesting story, and a funny one, and so to have that accepted that way made me really delighted. But then there was this other thing. I'm a performer, so when I get up and talk about the book, it's like doing a show for me, and I love it. I love to go to a bookstore or an auditorium, and for an hour I'm performing in a way, but with material that I really know well, because not only did I write it, but I lived it.
Hmm. Well, I guess that makes you different from maybe certain other writers who might be quite solitary, shy creatures, because you don't have to be anything like an actor or a performer of any kind to be a great writer. But if you happen to be both those things, then that gets to be a wonderful combination when it comes to talking about the book.
Yeah, it gives you a chance to perform if you like that sort of thing. I actually, some of this book started out that way. About 10 years ago, I wanted to have a piece that I could get up and perform whenever I felt like performing, and I wrote a one man show called Never Have Your Dog Stuffed with a lot of the material that wound up in the book, but I wound up only doing it once or twice, but it stayed in the background, and I kept thinking about it. And when the time finally came, after this thing happened to me in Chile, where I nearly died a couple of years ago, I found myself going back over my life and thinking about how I had lived, what had sort of made me who I was up until Chile, and I started writing it down because I was looking for what there was in that would give me some clue about how I could make the most out of this new time that I had been given, this gift of another life.
This new Eden, as you called it.
Yeah, because I was within a couple of hours of checking out in Chile, and I was in a small town that happened to have this expert surgeon in it, and he diagnosed me correctly and took out about a yard of dead intestine that would have, really could have been the end of me. Mm-hmm.
I remember at one point in the book, you are having an experience with your mother. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about this in a moment, the fact that your mother battled increasingly serious mental illness for most of her life and just about all of your life.
Yeah.
There was one experience that occurred, I think this might have been when all of you were in Europe, and she suffered some kind of breakdown, and maybe it's you and your father are trying to wrestle her to the car, I'm trying to remember, but you're honest enough to tell us that in the middle of that really dramatic experience, it occurs to you, this really belongs in the in my life story. I mean, someday when I write a book, I got to remember to tell this story.
I didn't know if it would be a book. I didn't know. I think at that point, I was only 18. At that point, I didn't think I'd be writing my life story ever. But I knew I wanted to be a writer, and I was always trying to learn how to write. And it's an interesting thing, I think. This probably happens to all writers and probably actors, all actors. When you go through something really intense, like an experience that you know is the deepest kind of experience anybody can go through, while you're going through it, you're totally involved in it, but some other part of your brain is saying, remember this, that you can use this. This is an important human experience. You got to remember the details of this so that you can make it live in somebody else's imagination. I mean, you just can't help doing that.
Hmm. You, of course, hosted this PBS Science series for quite a number of years. And one of those programs was about memory.
Yeah.
And you talk in the book about kind of the disconcerting experience of undergoing, I guess it would amount to sort of an experiment or a demonstration, which very clearly showed that your memory was not as impregnable as you assumed or most of us assume about our own memories.
I think, you know, not only do we all feel from time to time, no, I remember exactly what happened, and I'll tell you what happened. We even accept that idea in courts of law where we have eyewitness testimony that's supposed to be impregnable. Well, this guy, this psychiatrist, he's a memory researcher, his name is Schachter at Harvard, he made me remember things that I had never seen. I had seen them, but I thought I had seen them in real life, and I had only seen them in pictures. And I couldn't tell the difference between the pictures and the real event that I had witnessed.
Hmm.
So you can put memories in people's minds in various ways like that.
Well, and of course, it makes you wonder, as it makes us wonder, too, about when we believe that we're remembering things from a long time ago. You say at one point, I'd always been surprised at how far back my memories go and the detailed scenes I'd been able to call up. I felt I had the raw material for understanding my beginnings, but now I began to wonder.
Right, because he said to me while we were walking in the park in Boston, you know, memory is not a very good basis for autobiography.
Mm.
So I mean, I put that in because I want to be straight about it all. I'm remembering it to the best of my ability, but I also know, especially based on what Schachter told me, that every time you remember something, you change it a little bit partly by the circumstances under which you remember it, the things you're feeling or thinking about then, and your feelings, your emotions, according to another memory expert I talked to. Those feelings, any emotions, make you remember things. And when you recall something in a certain emotional state, you're probably changing the memory by virtue of the state you're in now. And after a while, I think what's happening is we're remembering memories of other memories and so on, so that it starts to get to be like the dog in the title, Never Have Your Dog Stuffed. You know, one of the things in this afterword that you mentioned is I tell in there about how this amazing thing happened to me after going around the country talking about my poor dog who died and how we had him stuffed, hoping to keep the memory of the dog alive. And then he came back from the taxidermist looking hideously unlike the real dog. And, well, what happened was that after talking about that and thinking about it so much and it being a kind of a mantra for my life, you know, don't stuff your dog. Let change happen. This is what I think I've learned. Well, now I'm sitting in a bookstore signing books. This is about a year ago. And a woman comes up to me and says, I'm your fourth cousin, and I have some pictures to give you, from the family pictures. And I open the envelope, and the first picture is a picture of my father with his arms around my dog, Rhapsody, the one that I loved. And it doesn't look anything like how I remembered him, because the stuffed dog had completely replaced in my mind the image of the real dog. So it was like a perfect example of what's wrong with stuffing the dog. It's this, the stuffed dog had become a memory of the memory of the memory. The picture itself was a kind of stuffed dog, because it wasn't the real dog. It was just a flat representation.
Right.
But my God, it was so much better. It was so much closer to the real dog.
As I looked at the yellowed photo, the two images jumped back and forth in my head, the caricature of a stuffed dog and the vague memory of the living animal, as if they were vying for dominance. "This is your dog," one said. "No, this is your dog," said the other. I was holding in my hand the sad proof of how a memory can be completely erased and replaced by another.
Right.
We're speaking with Alan Alda. We're talking about his memoir. It is called Never Have Your Dog Stuffed and Other Things I've Learned.